I'm Michaela Gaston. Thank you so much. Again, longtime ally. Wonderful team. So Oya, of course, is the trickster, the quintessential Venusian trickster who hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change. So how lucky we are to be incarnationally coinciding at this moment and in this room where there is so many such a proffering of generous opportunities being bestowed upon us to animate. So we are here to do that. So those of you been hanging with me for a while know Muti. Muti comes from the Sangomas of South Africa. It means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. We don't source power. We invite it. Venus invites and Mars Venus magnetizes and invites and Mars animates it. So I have Muti here, which is coyote hair from Stella Coyote and tobacco from Syria when it was beautiful. And other mysterious ingredients from my garden. And so we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster, residing within each one of us, awaiting this time of dire beauty, open the path before all of us, that our inward dedication may magnetize outward opportunity, that we may be a culture of reciprocal blessing. There we go. So the mythic news, by tossing lightning at the closed loop of the story circle, Coyote creates a liberating spiral for all beings. So anybody here bored with themselves, bored with circular patterns of any kind, personally or collectively? Because again, the lightning comes in to strike that circle and turn it into a spiral. So off we go, oh auspicious audience of the age. Because that is how that is how Scheherazade spoke to everyone, oh auspicious audience of the age. So, you know, again, many of you know that, but the beautiful guiding sky earth story, planets are real and they also symbolize, the whole universe is symbolically speaking to us. Each planet represents a living quality of intelligence that resides within each one of us and connects us to the world. So as we introduce them, you can feel that part of yourself quickening. So right now, Uranus, trickster, ingenuity. Uranus is nature's evolutionary ingenuity that likes against all odds. Goes against all odds? Perfect. Here we go. And it's a part of ourselves, coyote, raven, seeds that sprout after cataclysm. You know, again, that comes alive at this time within us as well, in forming a working partnership with nature. We know our task is great and we can't do it alone because it's humans by themselves alone that got us into this pickle, but only by a willingness to cooperate with everything. We say magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, and cooperators are standing by. So, so let me introduce them. You know, I love also my buddy Robert Bly, who one of his later poems says, you know, we want to be so grateful for keeping our small boats afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. So we also feel, you know, for all of the ancestors, you know, all the beings on this land, the wonderful New Orleans voodoo ritual in the morning, which is a lovely thing to do, is you take your morning beverage out and you pour a libation and you say, for the beloved dead. And we all now think of those we love who've died. And you go, for those whose names are lost in the mists of time, pour another libation. For all those whose bones lie beneath and upon this earth, another libation. We, the living, salute you. So I want to bring in one of my favorite ancestral aunties who is eager to be here and whose chart is transiting. You know, we can all even after we're dead, our charts come alive, going, oh, the publishing transit after the death transit. There we go. So Marie Laveau was the great voodoo queen of New Orleans. And it was said of her that Marie Laveau did not create cultural movements, but a woman of her substance understood what was at stake. She saw a role to be played and played it to the hilt, helping to coalesce a scattered and oppressed people into a moment of cultural dynamic ecstasy. So we don't have to create movements. These winds of change are sweeping through the world. We want to put up our sails to catch them and cooperate. So Uranus rising in the east, you know, again, and Marie Laveau, there are images for each degree of the zodiac. It's all very witty. The image for her son is a Ouija board, one of the great ways of keeping things open. And so we go, the Ouija board, we are all the Ouija board of directors here. There we go. It's time to convene the Ouija board of directors. So thank you, Marie Laveau, hovering around us. There we go. So images for each degree of the zodiac. Uranus rising in the east right now. Its image is a magic carpet ride. So here we are into the Scheherazade and Arabian Nights. We're all on a magic carpet ride. And what do you want on your carpet? And who do you see there? And everybody's carpet. So part of the dynamic story of now, and as I tell the story, it's useful really only to the degree that it resonates, you know, believe nothing, entertain possibilities. It resonates within each one of us. But part of the dynamic is Uranus is rising now. Ooh, and can't we all feel, even at the beginning of this gathering, so many great serendipitous synchronicities of conversation going, it is good to gather now. So Uranus is rising, but it looks retrograde, as though it's going backwards, which is inward, and then it stations, appears to stand still in the sky on December 25th, on Christmas Day, and then it goes forward. Poof. So we go, ooh, Christmas is real this year. The gods will use everything. It is the birth of the Venusian trickster redeemer bounding onto the world stage. Again, the Venusian trickster redeemer within all of us, regardless of our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment. We go, oh. And so, you know, Christmas is always when something is born. We know the Amanita mushroom story of Christmas, right? Do we know this? It begins to make sense out of a lot of the quirky things we do. So in the north, the shaman dresses as the sacrament, red and white, Amanita mushrooms. Amanita mushrooms grow under fir trees. Reindeer eat them. The shaman drinks the reindeer piss, the experiences of flying. They fly to the North Pole, you know, and they gather wisdom and they bring it down the hearth and everyone thinks. And that's why Christmas is an Amanita mushroom festival. It's a sacrament of wisdom and kinship. And my favorite Christmas tree decoration is it's a ceramic thing, and it's the three magi, the three astrologers, arriving at the creche and then going, it's a girl. Whoa. So that's what we have going here, because the Venusian trickster, again, within all of us, you know, is very different from the kind of Mars. We say the world is being destroyed by uninitiated Mars, hyper-yang, death frenzy. You know, soon it's, you know, eating over the sink and then planetary extinction. Mars with no Venus, and it is always Venus, beauty, and art that initiates. Remember also when Chang'e Mars, whom we'll be honoring, positive Mars, you know, gets too full of himself. You know, Venus walks into the room and he goes, whoa, and he bows and the crown tumbles off of his head. And that's what we also have in mind. Now, Scheherazade, everybody knows who Scheherazade is, pretty much. Again, we want to bring her into play, but all things are kind of syncretized. So Scheherazade, you know, in the Arabian Nights, King Shahryar has been betrayed by women, and he's very grumpy. It's a whole phallic problem, phallic narcissism. And so he's marrying virgins and, you know, each night and then killing them by morning. And so the land is getting pretty thin of virgins. But Scheherazade, who is the daughter of the Grand Wazir, volunteers. And everybody goes, oh, no, you don't have to do this. And she goes, no, watch this. Okay, so she begins the night, and she tells a story that is so beguiling, and then perceives the dawn of day and ceases to say her permitted say. But it's so interesting, he can't kill her. And it goes on for 1,001 nights, by which time he goes, boy, have I been a dingbat. And you have broadened, you have expanded, you have liberated me, you are my savior, you have liberated my heart. You know, and then they get truly married, and Scheherazade wears a gown embroidered with all of the plants and animals, all the flora and fauna of this earth. Over and over again, the king must wed the earth. And years ago, I had wonderful Turkish novelist on the radio show, Visionary Activist Show, and she's got a great book, Scheherazade as a Character on the Road to Baghdad. And at the very end, she said, you know, in the Middle East, before Islam, before the organized religions, the predominant deity in the Middle East was She-Wolf. And throughout the entire Middle East was an azure blue flag emblazoned with a female alpha wolf's head on it, you know, wafting everywhere throughout the Middle East. I'm like, whoa, where's she? Bring her back, you know? And when I was in Syria, when it was still beautiful 10 years ago, I would ask people about this, and they go, yeah, we seem to remember her. So in my understanding, Scheherazade She-Wolf, She-Wolf has morphed into Scheherazade. So beneath, again, the kind of thin, shape-shifting veneer of being human are all the plants and animals shimmering, not only on her gown, but beneath her skin. She is the earth. Again, the king must wed the earth. But also, it is through her storytelling, her eloquence, her bravery, that she liberates all women, liberates the land, but liberates even the tyrant who has hardened his own heart. Mm. You know, and that is part of our dynamic. You know, I spent some time in the San Ignacio Lagoon, a couple of trips, led by wonderful Michael Stocker, who is a living treasure of the ocean here. And in San Ignacio Lagoon, it's where the gray whales have forgiven humans. It's an extraordinary place, the only place on the planet where humans used to be killing them, and then stopped. But one day, Pachika Mayoral was out in his little panga, and a gray whale came up, and he was terrified because the gray whales had been fierce and protective of their young, of course, and killed people. And it comes up, and he's like, whoa, and it's like, I just want you to scratch me. So he tentatively begins to, and it purrs, and it brings its children. And from then on, in that lagoon, you know, whales would bring their babies and play with humans. Scientists would come down and weep. Scientists weeping now is a great tarot card of, again, the integration that we really do love what we study. And they would weep. So there came a great danger in which Mitsubishi was going to buy that particular birthing lagoon and turn it into a salt factory and destroy the whole thing. And the president of Mexico had agreed. But the fisherman invited the president of Mexico to bring his wife and child on the boat. And Pancho Mayoral, the son of the original contactee, said the whales knew what they had to do. He said they were never so beguiling, like, hello, hi, hello. And and everybody on the boat was streaming with tears of kinship and healing, as you do. And the president of Mexico saw his wife and child weeping and canceled the plan. Right? So keep in mind, as our cultural strategy, the whales did not go, you running dog lackey of corporate imperialism, you dingbat. They go, no, we're going to just open your heart so wide open that you remember kinship, that you remember kinship. You know, all the myths are pouring in to speak to us. You know, the Mabinogion is the great Welsh Arthurian legends, and gathered in the 10th century, but the stories are much older. And there's an extraordinary moment, you know, where the elders get together and go, oh, the men have just found out they have something to do with children, and it was going so well before now. And they go, we can see what's going to happen, you know, women as property, you know, again, all of that, you know, children as property. And humans will set forth on their individual path until they lose kinship not only with each other, but with the earth herself, until the earth herself might die. All right, they wrote, they're pitching it to us. And then they said, there will be some humans gathered here at this mystery school disguised as a Bioneers conference in an embassy suites. And they will keep all the uniqueness of their individual journey, but at the same time join once again into the vast dream of kinship. And I go, they're pitching it to us. So keep that in mind also, you know, when in the idea of visionary activism, of pragmatic mysticism, you know, all of these things that we can invite in. The incredible, really great event of Shell dropping all of its drilling plans in the Arctic. And that was the intelligence of the Arctic doing that, even without our kind of like help. Again, even more effective, this call and response. We say, you know, power and backstage allies want to help, but they must be invited. And it's dedicated gatherings like this, like now, and the power of art that invites power into the world. So the Arctic, again, 2 years ago when Shell put up its drilling rig, allies who were there watching. It was clear horizon, and on the horizon, a giant iceberg form appears and just goes dum 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 right for the drilling rig, causing Shell to go, "Whoa, we better skedaddle." And this shouldn't happen. I'm sure it's a or whatever. But then the whole thing was doomed. They ran onto a shoal, and the tugboat towing them broke down, and the tugboat rowing the tugboat broke down, and then they were cited by the EPA for innumerable violations, and the Arctic went. And then they came back just again this summer, and we were, many of us were saying, you know, again, may the intelligence of the whales, that's part of their northern journey, you know, open the hearts of people to reconsider, you know. And again, we had this powerful lunar eclipse recently, and again, we don't derive, you know, credit or anything, but we're all participating in a current. And I was with neighbors, and they were like, "Well, what's an eclipse?" And I go, "Well, it's a metaphoric opportunity, you know. It's the sun casting the Earth's shadow onto the moon, so we see shadow. But for tens of thousands of years, people have used it as, what would we like to be eclipsed by what?" And they were like, "Well, sort of like what?" And I go, "Well, we might say, may the hubris of humanism, may the rudeness of drilling, may the rudeness of drilling in the Arctic be eclipsed by the whale's compassionate heart and sane reverence restored to the world." And they're like, "That sounds like a good idea." So again, you know, all of these things, you know, cooperators standing by. So I am very dedicated again to Jornus Trickster. This is the quality that's coming alive in all of us, and it's trickster medicine. Is only one of many medicines, each one of us, who brought what to this party. All the skills are important, but it is the sine qua non, because it's the medicine that makes all the others effective. It's the idea of teasing into every molecule of our being, you know, the principle of democracy and cooperating with everything. So into the cauldron we go, may the hubris of humanism be thrown into the cauldron and ladle out the truth of animism. I love, you know, John Burdett in his novel quotes a Thai saying that says, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. Mm-hmm. Sense that everything's alive and worthy of respect. Remember, the word respect means to look at again, respect. You know, but it's also a call and response. It's an intimacy. The Venusian hero within all of us is here to restore intimacy. So Coyote and Raven and Lewis Hyde said, Coyote is lucky if enough con men show up to school her or him. And we go, we are so lucky. We are so lucky. And Hyde does an interesting thing about, it is true on this planet, one of the great engines of evolution is the predator-prey dynamic, one of the great mysteries that, you know, Darwin and many have written about. And what Hyde says is, if we go back 60,000 years, predator much smarter than prey by just brain size and number of folds in brains. We come forward 30,000 years, everybody's smarter. Predator still smarter than prey by brain size, and then we come forward and we go, ah. But Darwin knew that there was something missing from his theory, as all great social scientists did, and that was altruism. What accounts for altruism? Mm. Well, now we bring in Neptune. We're all in this dream together. And the restoration of manners, allies who are, you know, doctorate in predator-prey relations say, even among predator-prey, there's great manners. You know, a hawk overhead sees a prairie dog, and if the prairie dog is close to its hole, it wiggles its eyebrows or some secret signal going, don't even bother, you know, just you'll waste your energy. And the hawk goes, thank you, I'll eat you later. Okay, there we go. So Hyde says, trickster myth derives creative intelligence from appetite. It begins with a being whose main concern is getting fed, and it ends with the same being grown mentally swift, adept at creating and unmasking deceit, proficient at hiding his tracks and at seeing through the devices used by others to hide theirs. Trickster starts out hungry, but before long she is master of the kind of creative deception that, according to a long tradition, is a prerequisite of art. I go, ooh, that's fun. You know, there's a lot of false attribution, but so maybe Rumi said this, you know, but there's a, Rumi says, whoever finds love underneath disappointment and grief disappears into 1,000 new disguises. And Jornus, the trickster, says, we are big gods. We don't really care what you humans do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice. Coyote, again, trickster, is very interested in authenticity when things match. Again, Americans have a very challenging time, until now, of distinguishing between the con man and the trickster. Again, they look similar. It's like a wonderful Jungian ally of mine said, when people flatter you, they're paying you for what they're about to take. We go, ooh, that's fun. Different than praise. See, again, the con is the flattery. The praise is the actual nutrient. We want to have our discernment there. So the con man, you know, I think also, you know, earnest, you know, is, oh, I want you all to feel my pain, and nobody feels more pain about the earth than me. And we go, man, that's a con. You know, we say, you know, empire and dominance and control going down, you know, row, you bastards, you know, running on fossil fuels, culture of reverent ingenuity rising from the rubble. These are themes we've been animating for years. But so we want to be inviters, storytellers, magnetizers, agents of renaissance. You know, come on over from that which is going down to that which is coming up. You know, as Alan Watts says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. You know, going, come on over here. There we go. And it behooves, and I love the word behooves. It behooves us, you know, as agents of, we are inaugurating a story. Scheherazade is the earth. We are all her agents. You know, in this, what passes for political discourse and the election and all, we are electing and inaugurating a guiding story, an irresistible renaissance story. Our word, inaugurate, comes from the augur, the diviner. Augur means diviner. Part of all of us that would walk out into nature, and nature through her patterns would reveal the most responsible human, and then they would be inaugurated. Mm. You know, so again, when we excavate words etymologically, they reveal themselves to us, you know, going, oh, you know, the word privilege means private law. And you go, there you go. Mm. You know, just again, if you just go back, it takes it to a more living and self-revelatory realm. So we go earnest, you know, earnest, again, dominance, colonialism, no matter what label we stick on our ass. You know, sincere is, you know, that's the toxic mimic. So trickster runs on the fuel of discrepancy. You know, what is, what should be. You know, what people say is and what not. It's very keyed to that. You know, I love also the study that said to the degree to which people are ironic is the degree to which they have the capacity for compassion. And we go, well, that's, ooh. Because we think of irony as kind of a, you know, British bitter put-down thing. But to be ironic, you have to be holding at least two stories at once. Again, what is, what should be, what people are pretending it is, what actually is. And to be compassionate is to expand, again, like Scheherazade, our repertoire of stories, to be able to hold more and more stories. One of the great sayings from the deep, dedicated black spiritual teachings of the South says, there's no one we couldn't love if we really knew their story. And the, and that.
That's right.
So to be, you know, to approach the world and everyone in it with informed, reverent curiosity, going, what happened to you? You know, is useful. And the first time I said this, because it's such a beautiful guideline, you know, somebody said, Donald Rumsfeld, you know, and I go, thank you for volunteering to be the member of the audience to love Donald Rumsfeld. That's really good. Because there's more than one of us. We get to you know, shift things up. So as we are, you know, gathering here, you know, with such synchronicity and connecting with allies in so many great ways, and then when we spiral forth, the diaspora, you know, the con man, well, there's Trump, really. Trump is really like the Frankenstein animated cartoon of American murderous vulgarity. You know, you know, and a friend of mine who works in politics in a good spiritual way says, you know, when you see horrible things, you just go, thank you for revealing yourself. Whoa, that was really, whoa. you know, it's we need many kinds of newses, you know, the Jungian news, phallic narcissism rose 20 points today in a spectacular display of, you know, perpetual dedication to war. Whoa, okay, you know. But we also, you know, I go on your behalf. I'm based outside Washington, D.C. I go to the underworld. I go to the Conservative Political Action Committee. I hang out with whistleblowers and former NSA people and all kinds of stuff. And I'm usually dressed like this, right? But they like it, you know, because we're all moving our emotional default setting to woof, woof, wanna play, you know? And, you know, woof, woof, wanna play. You know, and some, if people don't, you go, oh, okay. You know, and sometimes people do, oh. So people, you know, Ayn Rand, right-wing Austrian economists come out, you know, go, who are you? And I go, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. and they go, Zed is so cool, right? So see, there is no prison for the unexpected, you know? I said I'm an angry feminist environmentalist, it's like, well, there are plenty of prisons already available. But see, the idea is the unexpected liberates everybody into a fresh story.
That's right.
You know, okay. You know, and in small ways and large, you know, we again, who brought what to this party? I was once part of a kind of insane, half-corrupt Gurdjieff magic school in London a million years ago. But there were some good things, you know. We were living in a very bad neighborhood, so we would make everything an ally, including words. We'd have our safe word. And so remember that when sociologists took videos of people walking down the street into prisons and asked muggers, who would you mug? They were like, anybody not rhythmic, you know? Anybody off rhythm. So in the London school, you know, we would have our special word. So somebody come up to you on the street or come up to me on the street and go, you know, I have a knife, give me your wallet. And I'd go, rutabaga. They go, whoa, too weird for me. I'm gonna go mug somebody arrhythmic, you know? So, you know, again, the disruption, as if we were to be politician whisperers, as Cesar Millan is dog whisperers, Cesar Millan says, you know, remember, no creature, and dogs don't like the word no, but hey, just to snap, and then, hey, not that, but here, over here, there we go, there we go. So we are directors of swoosh, you know, swooshing. So we disrupt, you know, and discourage and critique, and then we encourage right over here. Like somebody at the KPFA craft fair came up to me in August and were like, oh, what about the prediction of there's going to be a terrible economic collapse in September, and we should all buy gold, or, you know, or whatever. And I go, well, that's, you know, kind of, Ron Paul's fear-mongering, but are we not all aspiring magicians and alchemists? Where would we like economic collapse? We go, oh, in the polluting industries, come this way, economic collapse, there we go, into Shrell's drilling rig, yeah. there you go, right. Whoosh, right over there, not there, but over here, there we go, because also one of the main reasons is apparently Shell's board of, you know, directors, Ouija board of directors, you know, they'd spent billions, right, and they were like, oh, you know, we need some money, you know, if you drill and come up dry, you know, that's it, we're pulling, you know, it's too expensive, and we're having, for some reason, we're having an economic collapse that should have happened elsewhere, but it's right here in the fossil fuel industry, you know, and Shell drilled and came up dry. It's like, again, we remember this story of the UWA in Colombia, you know, so important and true. Exactly, when Standard Oil was going to destroy their lands, they wanted despair, they wanted to kill themselves. Again, we say better a trickster than a martyr, so they were like, so they remembered that. They go, wait, better a trickster than a martyr. And they did ceremony in which they invited the oil to hide, and Standard did three drills, came up dry, and packed up and left. Everything working. So if we have an animated cartoon of American murderous vulgarity, my friend Pat always says, thank you for it. Wow, that was really incredible. And again, everybody's got some role in the mystery play, we wonder. But John Burdett's latest novel, in which he talks about, you know, enhanced humans and scary stuff, you know. But he says, I'm being seduced by a killer clown, a sociopathic god on the Roman model who must win, not because he's good, but because he's a mighty order of being. And we go, yeah, we got one of those, yeah. But again, we love all of our teammates. You know, so many people here know the Yes Men. Mm. Yes, okay. Okay, the art of directing cultural attention. Again, the trickster liberates. Satire is liberating. I think South Park should do an episode on binaries, you know? I think, so, you know, anything we hold dear, really, South Park should do an episode. Pacifica Radio, for sure. You know, Symbiosis Festival. I mean, whatever. All of it, you know, some people were like, oh, you know, I saw the satire of Burning Man, and I think it's like, oh, no. Satire keeps things honest. You know, it's trickster. The woman trickster was famous for, you know, she would mock the community because she loved it and wanted to hold it, heal the discrepancy, hold it to its ideals. You know, satire is liberating. You know, irony liberating. Sarcasm means mean, you know. So satire is always intrinsically liberating. We want to keep that in mind. The people at Charlie Hebdo deserve to live and to breathe, but that was not satire. Mm. You know, again, satire intrinsic. But so the Yes Men, that they do a great job in an ongoing way and as part of our team. So many people know what they do. Their latest one, though, was they staged an event, a very realistic event, in which they go, Obama pardoned Snowden, and here he is, Edward Snowden. And they had an actor to look like Edward Snowden, and the crowd went wild, like, whoa, okay. And then they had Edward Snowden on the video going, just kidding. But the overwhelming response, and I go, once again, the yes men laying the tracks for the reality train to follow. And that's also for us, too, to begin to kind of proffer the against all odds desirable animations. You know, again, despite the FBI, despite all kinds of corruption, we see Obama pardoning Leonard Peltier
yes.
on his way out. We see that. We see that. You know, and again, all of us as skilled people to critique and go to the underworld, we want to know everything that's funky and horrible, you know, but then again, to bless it, to encourage it, to invite the good out of it. You know, whatever we speak to in another is the part of them that we're inviting to speak with the corresponding part of ourselves. Which is what I always love about Ami. We've worked together so long, but I do love walking down the street in D.C., you know, encountering, you know, homeless people, you know, and to each one, Ami would say, hello, king, and they would all say back to her, hello, queen, and I would say, Ami, do you know these people? And she's like, no. It's whatever we speak to one another, that's the story frame. Story, who's got the story? You know, how do we... have our language, our metaphor, and our stories be in accord with our dedicated heart. Mm. You know, and so much on, you know, Facebook and comments, you know, when we'll get to, you know, praising, we're all befoible, but praising the good in the Pope or in Obama did a good thing, and we critique the bad. But there are people going, oh, you're all conned, you know, if you knew what I knew, you know, then you'd be cynical and hopeless too. And we go, we do know what you know. You know, we're just a lot more fun. You know, and to run on the fuel of snark is the energetic equivalent of tar sands. Really, it's like. So we want to, you know, animate the desirable and direct the influence, again, discourage and encourage, and honoring the, you know, the fabulous, the Arctic itself. It is a time where everything, again, is permeating, you know, the protoplasm of reality, especially receptive to imaginative imprint. And everything, you know, everything that's been exiled, you know, comes back in as the necessary thing, the animism, the trickster medicine. So everything informed by that as a quality. I love the late, great Terry Pratchett for so many reasons. Again, he died in March. Many great characters. But his great character, Granny Weatherwax, she's got to do some impossible thing, and everybody says, you can't do that. It's a million to one chances against you. And she says, in a tone of voice that would cause wolves to stop whatever they were doing and go, oh. She says, million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10. So buzz off, right? So that's something we want to take on our flying carpet as we go. Now, I've lived with an actual coyote longer than I've lived with a human. It just occurred to me, going, I don't have an opinion about that. I just go, huh, look at that. But Stella, whose dad was a full coyote and whose mom was a dog, is a ambassador from those worlds. She has two minds in her, and she's still, I mean, she's approaching her second decade and still kick butt. You know, so we've learned a lot together. A lot about coyote. Coyote is different than dogs, no shame, but plenty of negotiation. I'll give you this, you give me that. No, how about this? Okay. So, you know, any relationship. So we all, and I think it's how we relate to animals and creatures and everything, which is with respect and negotiation. You know, early on in our living together, when I had a big, handsome, white, wolfy dog who was appalled at this being. But Stella Coyote, every night at 2 a.m., for whatever reason, she would gather things from around the house, like, you know, cloth and menstrual pads and things. Anyway, and make a circle of rocks, and she'd throw them in the air and animate them, and then she'd run around and bite me and the wolf dog, causing us to go, whoa. So I had to put my forehead to hers, and I go, I can see you're a great artist. How about if I keep you supplied with art supplies, you know, and you're going to be giving up a fair amount of freedom but in return you're going to get art supplies, and you know, and so you don't need to do this bitey thing, you know, run around and bite us. And she's like, oh, okay. So she never did that bitey. She did many horrible things, but she didn't do that thing again. You know, and again, this to and fro, you know, house sitters would, you know, by mistake leave their gloves somewhere, and she'd get them and she'd take them away. And then they would give her outdated pate from the co-op, and she would clearly communicate, you keep this thing up, you know, you can have a glove back. And so she would then drop a glove and go a little more, you know, and then a little more, and then the other glove would appear. It's true. Last man who spent the night in my house, Stella stole his wallet. It was a really great leather old thing, you know, and his security clearance at a really, you know, kind of criminal corporation. So she took that out and strewed the useless money across the yard, but took everything else to the underworld. Causing him to reconsider his position at MITRE and open a bed and breakfast. So anyway, so her work was done. There we go. So, but it is part of that deal. So, you know, negotiating, she gave up a lot of freedom. She loved to escape. She would have wanted 60 square miles, but she liked to get out, but not go away. She liked to stay just out of reach and bite the ankles of small animals and children. And I go, no, you really don't want to run into the authorities. No, you really, we got to do this deal. So she gave up freedom, but now, you know, she's 18 and really, you know, kick butt. And I go, see, it's paying off here. You're getting age. You know, and so she also got kind of free range because she leaps on the stove still and still steals everything. But for a while, she'd be like, bananas, must have bananas. And so she would peel bananas and eat them. And I go, all right. She trained herself to eat chili peppers. I was like, that was amazing. You know, and coconut water and green drinks. And she goes, too much spirulina in this one, but okay. So, you know, we're in cahoots. And I think it's a model that I've learned so much, and she does bless all of you. You know, I say, you know, I'm going to go talk to humans who want to be a little less rude, and she's like, well, tell them to speed it up, okay? but all of the coyote tricks, you know, it's all of that, you know, Mary Oliver's wonderful poem in which she says, you know, I sing in praise of the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared, and then at the last moment, smiled. Mm. And we might, again, as part of our metaphoric repertoire that we take with us, going, oh no. And see, Venus also, trickster dynamic, says, remember, even when we don't know what to do, invite in what does, you know, in the trickster realm. I've seen so many interesting kerfuffle situations in which my goat almost got gotten. I was like, oh no, and then invite in trickster, and it was great. The people who were going to get on stage to say a bad thing, their watches stopped in those antique days when they had watches, and they didn't make it onto stage. We go, thank you, trickster. Thank you, trickster. So we invite into this realm. We want reciprocal blessing, mutual aid, coyote manners and respect, but also, you know, what coyotes do, you know, they watch humans laying traps for them, and they follow along behind, and then they've learned how to spring the trap with stick, and then they pee all over it. and they go, that's also an option to take with you. I mean, it's an important thing. You know, but the implications are, you know, we want to change science, you know, that we not learn from death, torture, torment, and pain. You know, so much of, I heard an NPR thing, and they said, we're going to study dendrites and tree roots and the nervous system. And I go, oh boy, I'm really interested in that. So we took sea slugs and we put them in a tank and they were all happy. And then we shocked them and put them into trauma and rang a bell like, ah! And then soon all we had to do was ring a bell and they'd go into trauma. Isn't that wonderful? It's like, you bastards, you know. What about chocolate and orgasms and pleasure, you know? The real purpose of humans is to give pleasure to animals. You know, because what we do have these, you know, I don't know any animal really. Stella Coyote loves to be tickled, and she's like, you know, other coyotes can't do this. And I saw also a great, stingray in the Caribbean, and there was a man who was just caressing it, and it was just like, oh. And I go, are you feeding her? And he goes, he said, no, she's too excited to eat when she sees me. And I go, ooh. And it was like, right, she was like, again, just that little caress, you know, again. So a wag says, you know, rather than the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, we want the D.H. Lawrence Laboratory. Again, ingenious pleasure, pleasure. So part of the model also, again, in directing traffic, everyone has a role to play in the mystery play. You know, at one Washington thing, I was upstairs at a party and watching Obama with astrological charts before me, and somebody sits next to me, and I go, oh my God, it's Grover Norquist. Whoa! I said to her, and then he did the strange thing. He got up and he danced on top of the astrological charts. I'm like, however we can be of influence, well, that'll do. And I said to my friend who got me into this, going, all right, what's Grover's role in the mystery play? And he goes, Grover's going to take down the military-industrial complex. And I go, really? Okay, because Grover's famous for we should shrink government down to the size of a baby and drown it, you know, flag on that play, horrible metaphor, five-yard penalty, you know, declined. And he says, no, but he's really into cutting military waste. So again, we go, as dog, we go, no, hey, drop the baby metaphor. Hey, over here, go get them. It's like IRS and Scientology taking each other on, going, there you go, there we go. That's very good. So I also like, you know, the perversity that in the Western press, Daesh is called ISIS, you know, which is trippy. But we go, oh, Daesh, you know, you think, you know, when you die, you're going to be met by 144 virgins. But no, it's 144 provoked vegans that you're going to meet with. We're switching the metaphors. I noticed the other day that Putin's birthday is a few days before mine. We're both Libras. We're both Libra dragons. I was like, what are you doing with my chart, Putin, Vlad? And then I thought, you know, like in families, you know, the astrological dynamic, also families are living organisms. So the dangerous advice I like to give to parents whose kids are acting up, like, is you need to be wilder. Because if you're wilder, they'll be more stable. But you're being boring, and they've got all the wildness, you know, so be a little more wild. So I'm thinking of starting a program of, you know, everybody encouraged to adopt a tyrannical dingbat mythologically themselves and cut a deal. So I go, Putin, we're sharing this chart. How about, you know, I go to the gym more, and you stay up late watching Law & Order reruns and having bubble baths and sleep in late. There we go. Oh, there we go. All right. No, don't know what happened to Putin and his plans for Syria. He's just sleeping in all the time. So we have mythic themes, you know, throughout human history, big themes. Again, we say mythic figures are metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And we also say the divine wants to be liberated from past confines of human imagination. You know, whatever template we create, you know, is what will be animated. So we have myths, and then we have fairy tales, you know, much more local, but fairy tales, how a culture passed on its botanical and scientific knowledge packed into the symbolism. And then we have detective novels, you know, same idea. And I was wondering, you know, detective novels, crime fiction, when did they start? You know, 231 BC in China is the oldest ones we know about. But it's the same model. You know, in the 231 BC, it was the purpose of the all of us, the person who is really authentic, you know, their inside and their outside matches, or aspiring to be so, who goes to the underworld in order to restore human affairs to be in accord with the mandate of heaven. And in that journey to the underworld, it helps to have a buddy. Oh, you cute thing. And it helps to have a buddy, you know, and again, because it's, you know, did you see that?
Did you see that?
Because, yeah, exactly. Because, you know, when we see something terrible coming down, it's really helpful to, you know, ally in a glance to go, oh, they see it too. Now we can make fun of it. And in journeys to the underworld, what very often happens is the person of integrated dedication encounters up to no good person. But they can feel it, and they go, ooh, I can feel the texture of your authenticity. You know, so I want to change sides, but I have underworld skills that you need. We go, excellent. So we want to be that quality of person to go, yes, you hackers, yes, you former NSA guys, yes, you whatever, come on over here. We need your skills. Hanging out with the NSA guys, again, who were 40 years in the NSA before, like, that's enough. You know, and they do think that the Bush administration should be charged with war crimes around 9/11 for many, many reasons. And part of it also was, they said, what happened to the NSA and its hoovering in of enormous amounts of information right before 9/11 was huge corporate pressure. You know, the corporations want the information. You know, and so that's one of the strands. But so with the 40 years in the NSA, you know, head of cryptology, until there was like, no, that's enough. This is bad. And I did love telling them, and James Banford, you know, the image for Edward Snowden's moon, 13 plus Scorpio, in the Sabian system, I go, its image is telephone linemen at work installing links to other realities, the cosmic switchboard, and they're like, that's very interesting. I was just talking to Ed, and, oh, okay. But anyway, so the whistleblower on my right says, you know, you know, my mother was an astrologer, so I'm not as straight as I look. You know? And then the guy, the whistleblower, former head of cryptology, says, but I'm really interested in how we can be influential on the 9th and 10th dimensions of reality. I was like, you know, lads, I think you found the right radio show where all of you will be welcome, you know, the metaphysics of whistleblowing. So that idea of, you know, going to the underworld, and we do want to go to the underworld, and Ami's going to help us guide us into the underworld where we can gather our intelligence, but to go with a jaunty playfulness. Remember great allies, Rick Steiner and David Grimes, and who say wolves, even though they are hunted, even though they must hunt, they play every 30 minutes. Because they have watches. But they go, you know, play, so no matter what, play. And I love Vine DeLoria, great buddy, great late buddy. You know, last time I saw him, he was being honored at the Library of Congress, and people said, you know, all the great AIM leaders were there, the American Indian Movement, and they said, you know, only Vine's authenticity kept them from going. And he said, Vine said, you know, today I meet many, many young activists, you know, who are very, very serious about themselves. He said, we were very serious about the issues, but we were always playful. That's how we got stuff done. Mm-hmm. And that's the way we go to the underworld. Mm-hmm. Take us there with Yaba.
That's right, Yaba.
So Ami, by morphic resonance and these powerful chants to the Orishas, bring them in. You can feel the protoplasm of reality getting more fluid again. Mm-hmm. It changes the texture. Because now we move into the realm of Neptune. The outer planets represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary ingenuity. You know, and they're the keepers of the whole big frame story. So again, what they proffer to us, all of nature is saying, we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Let's try healing them first. You know, let's play to their strong suits of symbolism and beauty and poetry. Mm-hmm. So Neptune is how a culture tells itself its own story through the images and music that circulate through mass mind. Mm-hmm. You know, and in esoteric tradition, it says the purpose of ritual magic was always to spiral into group human mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. So we who are gathered here, not under hot reactivity, we have not seen someone we love killed in front of us. You know, it behooves us again to generate a field of expanded repertoires of response. We say to react to anything is not free. To cultivate an ever larger repertoire of responses is to align ourselves with nature's evolutionary ingenuity, going, whoa. So again, we can, you know, gather again what we would wish to waft out. So think of Neptune. Neptune is in its home realm now of Pisces for the first time in 165 years. Wow. It's everything that has ever moved the human heart to kinship. All poetry, all beauty, all everything available for each person by our own affinity, you know, to dig into that well and bring it alive again through fresh expression and a collaborative partnership. You know, so think of Neptune as the invisible foggy tendrils that actually guide molecular reality of culture behind it. So all of us, you know, maybe we'll be first responders going, I can feel it. I can't see it quite yet, but I can feel it. There's a shift. And what Neptune says is, imagine that the deepest, most shamed, most exiled, most soulful part of each one of us is about to be completely welcome. You know, it's like everybody, ollie, income free, time to leave, witness relocation programs, no matter how groovy they might look. You know, the circle of habit being struck by lightning, turning into spiral, all of that. You know, so we welcoming back all that's been exiled. Neptune in its radical form, you know, is all that human culture has exiled, dissed, undervalued, suppressed, but said to be where humanity's soul lives. So that part of us, you know, that has been dissed and shamed, and it says in a big way, it says, oh, humans, don't be distracted by obvious celebrity, hungry ghost, hoo-ha. Look at what's missing, what hasn't been invited to the party. That's where the real treasure lies, within each one of our psyches and also within the world. There is self-mythologizing. I mean, you know, there's the shadow of everything. You know, the shadow of Neptune is, since we're all in this dream, what's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine too. there's a con to everything. You know, I love, you know, astrological quipper J.H. Jacobs would go through the signs and say, a Cancer's just a Scorpio in a housecoat. Those who know were laughing because it's really good and true. And, you know, a Libra's just an Aries that's been to charm school. And we go, well, yes, it's all, you know, and again, revelation is liberating and fun. But Neptune also says, let's extend our experimental realm of influence into the memosphere, to become public dreamers, to become artists of atmosphere, to create the atmosphere where the desirable can happen as part of our strategy. A whole participatory realm of influence. Again, when we have opportunities on stage or in conversations or in our own, you know, kiva and meditation, whatever, to, again, waft the desirable atmosphere out there. You know, we know that, you know, politicians and, you know, even Obama, they are the sail, we are the wind, you know. When 51% of the American populace was in favor of gay marriage, he was like, what a good idea. So it's not like, oh, bad person. It's like, well, it's our job then to create the atmosphere of the desirable. You know, and if we must work with Hillary, we might not have to. But if we go, a willingness to cooperate with everything. You know, I mean, well, we don't want to impose our yearning disability on Bernie. I'm going, oh, if he doesn't win, I'm not going to do anything. Bernie is fabulous. I mean, Bernie is an electric, you know, teammate. You know, yeah. But he's uniquely equipped to not be a celebrity, right? You can't. He's our teammate who's saying, you know, substantial, useful things, and it's also part of our dynamic. The people who are attracted to Trump think Trump's a trickster, but he's a con. Mm-hmm. And that's why actually Bernie can siphon Trump's voters off, because Bernie's really the real tricky, you know, quirky, authentic person. And so again, to liberate what's magnetized, going, no, you're, again, like Scheherazade, you know, you're falling for the con, for the toxic mimic, but what you really want is here. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. And he's having, you know, a working class, you know, whites and, you know, and, you know, a whole range and reach, so you never know. It's, again, fluid. But it's also not so much we're inaugurating a story. But if we had to work with Hillary, we would say, I looked for a chart, but we'd say if expediency is her problem, let it be our asset. You know, let us make it expedient to do good things. Mm. You know, to create that atmosphere going, and she's like, oh, well, I'll, yeah. So experimenting, you know, like me cutting a deal with Putin. You pick your own tyrant and cut a deal going, all right, I'll be more this, you'll be more that. So we love the model of everyone having a role in the mystery play, and we love mythological shape-shifting. Again, I love Terry Pratchett. He's got the four horsemen of the apocalypse, but somebody steals their horses, so now they're the four pedestrians of the apocalypse. And they, you know, it's death, war, pestilence and famine, but their horses get stolen, so then the pedestrians, and then they go into a pub, and they get drunk. Death is like, I got to work no matter what. But war, pestilence and famine get tipsy at the pub going, isn't there something we're supposed to be doing? I don't know. So that's a good thing to animate. Again, all of these things, many of you I've hung with for a long time, but some people are new and like, what's this? So there's sourdough starter, but just to kind of bring old things alive and express them as long as I still have enthusiasm. But some things that are so useful just to, try this at home. So woman long estranged from her adult son, finally a spiritual teacher, she was like, she just said, send me a dream. So she had a dream in which she saw an octopus wrapped around her son's heart. And she woke up and going, whoa. So she did not go into years of useless therapy. She thought, what can I shapeshift into? So in her mind's eye, she shapeshifted into a dolphin that butted gently against the octopus around her son's heart until it let go and swam away. And in 2 hours, her son called after not talking for 10 years and said, this is so silly, let's work it out. So again, these realms of influence, again, to be pragmatic mystics, to do everything in our dedicated common sense way, mm-hmm. plus, this additional thing. And in Terry Pratchett's novel, his last great act of generosity, they are so wonderful. Everything's alive. Everything's animated. Again, the restoration of animism. Even a moan escaped his lips. Happy to be free. Everything's alive and has a personality and a quirkiness, and so wonderful that he was honored that way. In the last book, there's the wonderful good witch, Tiffany Aiken, and she's a good witch because she does, she's kind and does real things, not frippery stuff. But there is a young man who wants to be a witch, and they're like, usually you're wizards, but okay. But they notice that he is a calm weaver. He is a calm weaver. Wherever he goes, violence calms down. They go, he can be a witch. So he's a great character. And at one point, great evil things were invading the world, kind of monstrous Trump things, penetrating from the astral plane into material reality. And they have to go, we have to guard the borders, as we do. We have, yes, over there. And glamour is one of the terrible poison weapons that the bad beings have. And the witches are like, glamour's no problem for us. And the elfin queen who's changed sides. Remember also, Milarepa, great saint in Tibetan Buddhism, one of their greatest saints, was a killer. A highwayman, a thug, and a killer.